cliffcentral.com.
This is Cliff Central. This is Beyond Ears and Eyes. I'm Shemaine Harris.
And I'm Liesl Tom.
With us on controls is Palisa Mabuye. Welcome to another edition of Beyond Ears and Eyes. I'm looking forward to today because it's been a bit of a battle, but I think we're going to get some information out of it, isn't it?
It has been quite a battle. So a friend of mine recently mentioned that she's so glad that the year of the monkey is going to be gone soon and we are going into a new year. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she said, no, you know, Chinese astrology. And I remembered, okay, vaguely, I've heard something about that. And then Shemaine and I set out to try and find a Chinese astrologer.
Totally.
Well, actually, I should say Shemaine did a bit more of the legwork than I did because she actually went and asked people.
Yes, I walked all through Chinatown. I mean, that's the in the Cyril Dene area. And I went to the Chinese shops, outside of there, looking for someone who would know of someone who can do Chinese astrology. And they were not impressed with me. They thought I was funny. And at one point, I was like, is it a joke? And then a young guy says, no, it's not a joke. But, you know, we don't know of anyone outside of China, you know, who can help you. And then some people said, and it's only the old people who practice this art form. And I was like, okay. But, I mean, it was quite interesting to see their reaction. Because they were like, what, black girl in Africa, you're looking for Chinese astrology in Africa? But it was fun because I had some really interesting conversations with people.
Well, our search did not bring up a Chinese astrologer, but we came across astrologer extraordinaire Richard Fiddler, who can also tell us about Indian astrology. Hi there, Richard.
Hi there, Liesl. Hi, Shemaine.
Hi, Richard. Good to meet you. Astrologer extraordinaire. Does that put you under pressure?
Yeah, just a little.
Okay.
It wasn't me. It came off the internet.
So you're good.
I guess, but you know, I actually had a radio show years ago on Tux FM, and actually that's where that tagline came about. DJ actually... came up with that, and that's where the astrology extraordinaire.
So, did you have your own? Did you have your own show where you did astrology, or were you a student still?
It was a weekly slot on every Sunday evening. I had a slot with a certain DJ, and we did the Interplanetary 69.
Okay. Do you miss radio?
Well, no, I haven't thought of that. You know, it just came up spontaneously then, but I guess here I am again.
Yay! Thank you for joining
us.
Yeah,
we are very happy to have you with us. Richard, can you shed any light on this quandary that Shemaine and I found ourselves in? Why does no one seem to be able to speak to us about Chinese astrology
in South Africa?
Well, you know, I'm not really surprised that that's the case. You know, astrology at the best of times is something that, you know, one could struggle to find an expert on. But Chinese astrology is particularly difficult in that respect. And you know, it's exactly what I would have expected. One would struggle to find somebody really well informed and capable in that outside of China.
And
fluent in English would be another whole thing. It's really, I think, the guarded is quite a, you know, precious secret to, and one would only learn it by going on apprenticeship with, you know, some master or what have you. And by comparison, astrology in the West is a lot more open, and you know, you can, if you really want to find out about it, there's lots of information out there.
Sounds like when you do the Sangoma thing, you know, in African tradition, not anyone is privy to the secrets and the know-how.
Absolutely, yes. And it's actually like that to a degree with all astrology, although, because even information is out there. You know, it remains a very obscure thing to all but those who really are determined to go and, you know, leave no stone unturned in their right. search.
Richard, just give me a moment, please. We're having slight problems with our connection. So if we do take a break, it's going to be because we want to try and get connected with you in a different way. So, and we would have to take your we've got your details, so we might have to call you on your cell. Would that be convenient? Do you have reception?
Yes, I do. Maybe okay. My landline.
Okay, landline would be great, but we're not going to do it on air.
Yeah, I forgot to mention, sorry, that Richard is in Wilderness. Jermaine, let you and I see what we can figure out while we get Richard on a landline.
Yeah, so you're going to get Richard's landline number. So Palisa's going to get your landline number, Richard. Look, I really don't know what to say because this is it's a very interesting topic. But at the same time, it is very complicated. And I'm not going to give myself out as a little bit of a Miss Toffee. And because you know what? People will lick you, you know, and I don't want to be licked because I don't know what I'm talking about. But yeah, so what would you like to say on the issue? Because we're still going to talk to Richard about Indian
and
astrology.
I believe he also mentioned when I spoke to him the first time, there's also such a thing as Tibetan astrology. Now, I have to say, I am relatively comfortable with the concept of Western astrology. It's mm-hmm. something that, you know, we almost grow up with. Every Sunday, you might not read it.
Mickey Mouse thing.
It's in your awareness all the time. Yes, Mickey Mouse thing.
But what has it done for you? Because it's made Western astrology, especially the bit that you read in the paper, kind of watered down because it's so general. Okay, you're Capricorn, and for every Capricorn, this is what's going to happen. I mean, it's such a farce. So I don't really pay much mind to it. So that's what it did. So people don't really take it seriously.
I agree with you to some extent, but I have found over the years that it's helped me understand myself better, mm-hmm. knowing my astrological chart and knowing where which planet was.
But that wasn't the Sunday Times.
No, it's not the Sterre Voorspel.
Yes.
I think that's a, you know, predictions. But predictions in general. You know, Jermaine, we speak to a lot of people in this esoteric field, and many of them make predictions. You cannot always believe that.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the same as when you somebody reads your cards or your, I don't know, whatever. You can change it. You decide, no, yes. I'm not going that way. So if somebody says to you, listen, you're going to lose your middle toe next week, you can actually be like, oh, hell no, we need middle toe. So yeah, and I think it's a sense of insecurity. So we need something to hold on to. We need someone to give us good news. And normally the news is good that you get, you know, you're going to be rich.
No, I found quite the opposite. I mean, I don't read the stars in the newspaper often, but the few times I have looked at it out of curiosity, the messages weren't positive. They were more warnings, and that, you know, whether the warning is sound or not,
plays.
If you pay attention to it, you might prevent something bad. You
but
know?
That plays on people's fears, and that is so unfair. To be playing on people's fears. But anyway, Palisa, is Richard back? Way, that's awesome. Richard?
Hi there.
Hi.
No, this is much clearer.
Yes. It is much better. Thank you so much for being so patient with us.
So
we've been waffling on.
No problem.
You know?
We know very little about astrology. The only astrology that I am even remotely comfortable with is Western astrology because we kind of, you know, grew up with it. It's been in our frame of reference since birth because we live in the West and, you know, newspapers.
Right.
But tell us, you were saying about Chinese astrology, why you weren't surprised that it was so difficult?
Well, I think it's partly due to the fact that Chinese culture as a whole is something that's, I guess, relatively alien to us, or at least we haven't maybe integrated culturally as much with Chinese, culture as much as with, by comparison, Indian or Greek or other European type culture.
Mm-hmm. But then they also, They also say that the Chinese are closed, not, you know, for...
Yes, exactly. It's that sort of privacy and guardedness. Mm-hmm. And if you were determined and you did want to study it, and then you went to China, I'm sure you'd find it. And in the course of studying Indian astrology, which I've done, mm-hmm. I have encountered in some of the books I've been using that deal with Eastern astrological systems in general, I have read articles by Westerners who have actually, you know, gotten the real meaty stuff, so to speak, you know, by going there and learning it there. So I have a sense of what it looks like when you do find the real thing, but I know that you just don't find such people, you know, very easily here.
Mm-hmm. But this is not your speciality. Yours is more Indian astrology. What is it? Is it Vedic or what do you call it?
Jyotish. Jyotish is arguably the proper word for it, and the word Jyoti essentially means light. Okay, so Jyotish means science of light.
Okay.
Okay, and that's I guess a Sanskrit word, a derived word. When people talk about it as Vedic astrology, it's essentially referring to the fact that the Vedas, you know, are these sacred texts that Hinduism is based on. So some people would also call it Hindu astrology, which would be the same thing.
Okay.
You know, so Indian astrology, Vedic astrology, Jyotish, it all basically refers to the astrology of India.
Okay.
Which is actually nearly identical to Western astrology, actually. And a lot of the core elements of Indian astrology come from the ancient Greek astrology, which really is the, let's call it the mother system, if you like.
Ooh.
You know, that modern Western and Indian astrology have derived from.
You know how the Greeks got on about being the seat of civilization?
Yes, yes.
So Richard,
well, it's a fact that the Greeks did come up with a lot of bright ideas, you know, and astrology is one of those things that they refined.
Charmaine knew I was going to do this, and that's why she's laughing. The Greeks invented sex, but the Romans introduced it to women.
I thought you were going to say the Romans introduced romance.
Richard, in which way is Indian astrology different to Western astrology?
Okay. That's an interesting question because there's differences on more than one level. On the one hand, there's purely technical differences, and there are also differences in the way it's practiced. And, you know, some of the technicalities would be a bit much to go into here because it'll start sounding very Greek, I think. You know, all of the technical astronomy involved in terms of, you know, that which distinguishes Western Vedic astrology. One of the most important things is the way they work out where the zodiac is located. Now, in Vedic astrology, the visible constellations in the night sky are very much what it uses to sort of fix where the signs are located. In Western astrology, the sun's position at the equinoxes and solstices determines, you know, where the zodiac signs sit. Now, the thing is, those different markers you might use to locate the signs, they're drifting apart very gradually. And so about 2,000 years ago, there was actually no difference between the two ways of working it out. And it's been moving gradually further and further apart so that now most people will find that in their Vedic astrology chart, there'll be the sign previous to the one they are in Western astrology. So if you're a Taurus in Western astrology, you might well be an Aries in Hindu astrology. That's, you know, to put it simplistically.
So do Hindu astrology, Hindu astrology use the same signs, the same, you know?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. That's a key point to grasp. That's why I say it's essentially the same system, the same language. It has 12 signs of the zodiac. The first one is Aries, the ram. The second one is the bull. The third one is the twins. And then it's the crab. And then it's the lion. Exactly the same. And the same planets are said to rule over those different signs. And then you also have something called houses in astrology. It's also something that they have in common. But again, they use slightly different astronomical criteria for measuring where these things sit. Now, that can eventually become important because it can result in the sort of final conclusions that the two different systems come to being, you know, can be quite different as a result. You know, as I said, somebody who might be viewed through the Western lens as a Taurus might become an Aries in the Hindu system, and that those are two very different character portraits, if you like. You know,
Richard, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to get clarity. Do the signs also have, do they retain their characteristics in Jyotish astrology?
Essentially, they do, because you know the characteristics of the signs of the zodiac are very much derived from such things as the planet that rules over that sign. You know, gives it many of its characteristics. You might be aware that the signs are divided into four elements: fire, earth, air, and water in Western and Vedic astrology. And you know, the signs in both systems are associated with the same elements. And you know, that, as I said, that has quite a lot to do with giving the sign its attributes. So, for example, fire signs, whichever way you look at it, are more you know, open and expressive than water signs, for example.
But
as I said, it's the same language. The same language.
Okay. There's a system that you use, though. Do you use it the same in Jyotish or Vedic, where you go, like, because I've seen that the different houses that you are explaining goes with the date, with dates, you know, like, say, for instance, 2 and 4 or 6, 8. But okay, that's totally wrong. But you know what I'm saying?
No, run that by me again.
Okay. So some of these houses in the yeah. Indian one kind of has those descriptions of fire and earth and calmness or whatever you call it. But it goes with numbers instead of I know it as per months. You know, like and September and I don't know.
Yes, well there's a difference between zodiac signs,
okay,
which are measuring something quite different to what you call houses properly.
Ah.
The houses, we could say, measure the space around the Earth, okay? So it's very much about your local experience in terms of where the place that where you are located. So the first house, for example, begins at the eastern horizon, and so the first six houses are the space below the Earth, and the second six houses are the space above the horizon. To put it in a very simple nutshell, the space around the Earth.
It's
a little technical, some of this stuff. The space around the Earth is divided into 12 slices.
Okay.
And those are the houses, and they have there's a sort of a correspondence between houses and signs, but they're not quite the same thing. You know, all the planets are circling the sun on the same plane. That's an important thing to understand. You know, it's not like one is going vertically across and the other horizontally. They're all almost like the rings of Saturn. All the planets are orbiting the sun on the same plane. Now, the zodiac, whichever one you used, you know, the Indian one or the Western one, the zodiac is essentially dividing that plane into 12 sections.
Okay.
And that's why we use that to point to or describe the position, relative positions of planets on that plane. So, you know, when we say that Mars is in Sagittarius, it really means that when we look from the Earth's perspective at where Mars is, behind Mars will be the constellation of Sagittarius. You know?
Richard, but this thing you've said about the Indian astrology, that it is the sign before your Western sign, that really confuses me. Because, you know, I'm a Virgo, and I would hate to think that in India I would be a Leo. Because Leo's egos are a bit, you know, out there for me.
Right. Okay. And what date were you born?
21st of September. And I'm not saying the year on air. Come on.
Okay. No, well, that's all right. the reason I asked you that is because the last, let's call it 6 days or 6 degrees or so, okay, of each sign, the same in both systems. So the fact that you were born right at the very end of Virgo actually means that you would be Virgo in both systems.
Okay, so when
there's a little area of overlap, and you're in that little overlap area where both systems view it through the same lens. Both systems would say you're Virgo. But if you were born earlier in September, if you were born like the 13th, 12th, before that, then you would be a Leo in the Vedic system. And if you check out some of the people you might know as Virgo born around that time, you know, earlier in September, many of them are very dignified, you know, and have a lot of authority and a lot of strength of character. Similarly, people you'd know as Taurus in Western astrology, they become Aries in Vedic astrology, and you'll see those people are not like Taurians. They're not lethargic and sort of very fixed. They're very dynamic, very assertive. And it's a bit of an anomaly that people don't really know what to do with, but Vedic astrology helps to clarify why you find these dynamic people born early in May. And likewise, many people that are said to be Aries in Western astrology, you know, people born, let's say, early in April, end up becoming Pisces in Vedic astrology. And you can see that many of them are a lot more sensitive and spiritual and so on than the usual descriptions of Aries. So, you know, the moment you actually start to investigate it, you'll see that there's a whole new world of a new way of viewing it out there that often is a lot more accurate.
Can I ask you, do you know of the school of thought that goes there's a 13th sign?
Yes.
What should we make of that? Because we're all going between the 12 and then they say,
yes.
But there's sign number 13 that we don't recognize in the West.
Right. I think, the short version would be, you know, just ignore that.
Okay.
And I said this because, look, this idea that there are 13 signs is not a traditional idea. It's not a well-established idea. The idea that there are 12 signs of the zodiac in both Western and Vedic astrology goes back a very long way, and even Chinese astrology has 12 signs of the zodiac. There is a certain constellation that slightly creeps into the what you call the ecliptic, which is actually that band I was referring to earlier, you know, that plane that we divide, the zodiac divides up into 12 sections.
Mm-hmm.
There is a certain constellation that sort of intrudes in one part of it, and then some people have taken this to indicate that it must be a 13th sign, but this is just how can I put it, fake news. it's not, there's no real tradition there, whereas the tradition of using 12 signs of the zodiac goes way back, and even the fact that we have 360 degrees in a circle is really based on the number of days in a year. And the 12 signs of the zodiac also divide comfortably into a 360-degree circle, of 30 degrees each, which is why we have these months of 30 days. You know, the very fact that we have 12 months in a year is derived from the zodiac.
Right.
You know, astrology is really the original calendar.
Right. Now, talking about the year, can we get a little bit of, information about what this year is going to be like?
What this year is.
Yes, maybe you can bring it from what the monkey intended and brought, and what the rooster will bring, and you know. So if you could pull it maybe from last year into this year. So for that one,
right.
and also we'd like to do the Indian one as well. So we're doing the Chinese one first, and then the Indian one before.
The thing is, I can't really tell you exactly what the year of the monkey was supposed to do and now the rooster, because really while I might have a general idea, I'm not really an expert, you know, in that particular method. I do know that they speak of the year of the rooster as being a year of, the rooster wakes us up in the morning, you know, it's crowing, calls us to duty. So there's this idea of it being a year of being called to duty and being more dynamic and committed to the work we have to do. That is, I guess, a bit of the popular wisdom that you could probably find elsewhere too. And I don't even know whether or not I can really endorse that. But from a Western astrological perspective, and this is where the Western and Vedic perspective, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
This coming year, and let's say since the latter part of 2016 already, things are in a way moving a lot more quickly. And prior to that, there would have been a lot more what I would call murkiness. You know, things were very uncertain and much more depressed.
And that's why we had such harsh years.
It's not a surprise at all that the last 2-ish years would have been difficult, and many astrologers were sort of, should we say, bracing for that, and bracing for it to being a time of, you know, if you think about it, it's not...
Lives
were just chaotic and uncertain, you know? And so I would describe it as a very heavy energy, and it would have made it very difficult for people to feel that they know what the way ahead is, you know, whether it's personally or on the larger sort of world stage. Whereas things are a lot more mobile and dynamic now. You know, I think some of it is certainly manifesting through all of the upheaval that Trump is causing, not because I consider what he's doing to be in any way progressive, but it's certainly shaking things up, you know, and it seems to, you know, be an early expression of what was described for the rest of this year as a time of things really being done in very new ways and a lot of innovation, really. It can be, I think, therefore, a very positive year ahead in as much as things move in new directions. There's a sort of a greater freedom, more options. You know, this is if there's ever been now a good time for you to take steps towards what you want to materialize in your life, you know, like innovative projects.
So wake up.
You know, ways in which you can... This is a great time for practical action that's doing things a little differently. And this theme of a very sort of practical originality is very strong for the rest of this year.
Is it too late to start? Because they say you need to prepare before you can actually even start. Is it too late to start? Or is this kind of like the year for people who were prepared and they hit the ground running?
Well, look, what I've been describing is a very sort of broad description.
Sure.
of an overarching energy, and it will manifest in very different ways for different individuals. And it is true, as you say, that what you can make of it will depend a lot on how you prepared. But it's going to be probably best for those people who have been itching to get ahead, you know, to get ahead with very practical projects that and visionary new social ideas, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of new social ideology. And even if it's partly as a backlash to what Trump is doing, there's a lot of that stirring. You know, it's a time where people want things to be done in better ways, whatever their idea about that might be. I think in South Africa, we're going to have some very interesting and I think important stuff happening in the latter part of February. Around the 26th of February, there's going to be an eclipse that I think will have quite an impact. It wouldn't surprise me, you know, there's been talk about Zuma possibly replacing ministers and so on. So I think that there can be a lot of change, and it might be pretty sudden around the end of this coming month.
I'll be looking forward.
In fact, I did write about this on my website a while ago. You know, I'm actually seeing this as a further continuation of process that's been going on now for about a year and a half, starting in December 2015, you know, when the rand suddenly dropped. Mm-hmm. So I think that there can be significant financial implications for South Africa the end of February. Probably a bit of a dip, to be honest.
That's not good news. I thought this was going to be a better year.
You know, those little dips are not the end of the world at all. They're just moments of reaction to things changing. So I don't see it as a disaster, but I see that we're still
working through the sort of last stage of a particular process in South Africa is really what I'm saying. And, you know, whether one thinks it's good or not, it's certainly causing a lot of people uncertainty and doubt. You know, it's not a time of great certainty in South Africa. I actually believe that towards the end of this year and early next year, South Africa will have a lot of improvement.
From your lips to God's ears, we need it.
But I need to also figure out, is that the crime? Is it our economy? Okay. Is that our job situation? Which links to that?
It specifically points to possibly the idea of very positive and principled new leadership. It does point to us being more active on the world stage and gaining a lot of, regaining perhaps some prestige and respect as a principled country.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
Yes, and there is that. South Africa's always been very inspiring for people you know, for many reasons and for many good reasons apart from the problems. But there's specifically a very, let's say, positive light shining in the latter part of this year and early next year in the realm of South Africa's international reputation and all of that. So I know it might seem like a sort of contrary to the current trends, you know, to say that, but I think that, you know, that sort of thing can easily turn around with the possible, for example, coming into power of new, more principled leaders. It may or may not be as president, but I think we'll have a sense that we can respect our leadership a lot more towards the latter part of this year.
Richard, how do you see this? Do you take South Africa's date of birth, so to speak, or how do you work it out?
Yes, actually, what I'm saying now is very much based on a chart created for the moment that the new constitution came into effect on the 27th of April, 1994. So, you know, in a sense, the new South Africa is a being. You know, it's a creature, if you like, or as a project, shall we say, and that particular. Or this new entity is coming up for. You'll note that it's coming up at in the latter part of this year and early next year. It'll be a multiple of 12 years, right? It'll be the second 12-year cycle because Jupiter, which is the let's call it the good planet, takes 12 years to go around the zodiac. So we are coming up for our second Jupiter return, and that Jupiter is located in the realm of leadership. Our sort of, let's call it public status, and for a country that would be its reputation internationally. So it is, you know, these things I've been saying about South Africa are indeed based on looking at how the current moving planets are affecting the birth chart of South Africa.
But I find it extremely interesting because the ANC has a leadership conference in December.
That's amazing, yes. Right? Yes. No, it's exactly like that because Nelson Mandela, his moon was in that same place that connects with or describes South Africa's leadership. I'm keeping it in very broad terms now without getting too technical, but what I find very interesting, and whether or not it happens this way, is that Cyril Ramaphosa has in his chart many of the where he has key planets in exactly the same location that Nelson Mandela had, which links to South Africa's leadership. And Nelson Mandela actually died when Saturn was in that same part of the sky. In other words, when the Grim Reaper planet came into our king zone, you know, our boss zone. That's what happened. We lost the leader.
Is that Saturn?
Coming back. Saturn, yes.
You call him the Grim Reaper.
Indeed.
Others call him the disciplinarian. I prefer disciplinarian.
Exactly. Well, there's all just different degrees of the same basic energy.
Okay.
Saturn is the most, traditionally, before Uranus, Neptune, Pluto were discovered, Saturn
was the most distant planet and therefore the most slow moving and the most dim. So it's associated with old age and with, you know, being it's things that are Saturn's also connected with the god Kronos and time. Mm. So Saturn's got a lot to do with our mortality and the limits of things, you know. So discipline is also about the limits, but just it's just a softer word, you could say.
Liesel, you're quiet. You know,
we sit here in the studio and take turns and point at each other, and it's, you know, it's a pity you're not here. Richard, we don't have a lot of time, but I just want to ask you, in Indian astrology, is there the same idea that we are moving through ages? Because we are now, tell me where I'm wrong, firmly in the age of Aquarius. Do they work on the same system? And what does that mean?
All right. Well, actually, that whole business about the ages, okay, is something that that makes a lot more sense when you are actually looking at both Western and Vedic astrology. Because you remember I said that there's, in Western and Vedic astrology, there's two ways of determining where the zodiac should be located. Mm-hmm. And I said that in the West, they use the sun's position at the solstices and equinoxes to determine that. Where the zodiac signs sit, and Vedic astrology uses the stars. Now, basically, those ages, that 25,000-year cycle, is all about the way those two different ways of measuring the zodiac intersect. You know, so now, to answer your question, it's not really a Vedic idea as such or a Western idea as such. It actually transcends the particular school of thought, you know. It is, in fact, due to the fact that the equinox on the 21st of March occurs in the constellation of Pisces, and that's moving into Aquarius, that's what that is based on. So in a way, it is the ascendant of the world, you know, that sign, Pisces going on Aries. Now, different people have different ideas about when that starts. As I see it, it might be another 200-300 years, and it has been said that it's also a gradual process. So it's not really possible to say that the age of Aquarius began on such and such a date. The general consensus is that we're in this process of moving from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius. That's quite a big subject, but you know, the sign Aquarius is very much associated with technology, for example, and science. And many people would view the shifting of the world's sort of paradigm, you know, into a more scientific type of perspective as one of the signs of the age of Aquarius coming about. And you know, the way communications is so central to our lives today is arguably also very much a result of Aquarius. You know, the symbol for Aquarius is these two wavy lines. And Aquarius represents the veins in the body.
Wow.
You know, so Aquarius is very much about the dissemination of information among the populace.
So it's all very technical.
It's a little.
But what I want to know is, in this day and age, even if you don't understand what it's all about, how can one apply it to one's life in, you know, different areas?
Yeah, what's the use of astrology?
Yeah, for me, especially sure. Today, because there's lots of things going on that you could use.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, probably the first thing to realize is that there's astrology and there's astrology and there's astrology, you know, because newspaper and magazine.
We don't talk,
not astrology.
We mentioned that in the beginning. No, we're not talking about that. That is a lie. That is a lie.
Right. And then even beyond that, there's even different methodologies and also different individual practitioners who can be very, very different in their level of skill and experience and ability to use it well. So I would say that astrology isn't necessarily going to be great for you just because it's astrology, but it's the same way that medicine isn't always good for you just because it's medicine. You have to use it well. You have to know what you need. You have to find the right expression of it and the right practitioner, perhaps. I think one of the best things one can do
to really benefit from it very deeply is to learn how it works yourself, because you know there's a lot of things that one would otherwise be confused about, to not really understand, and maybe easily misinterpret otherwise. If you learn to just simply do what you call calculating your own transits, which is when you look at where the planets are now in relation to where they were when you were born, and you watch your own life cycles, that can really profoundly enlighten you, I want to say. You know, not because it's going to help you avoid your problems or make you rich or anything like this, but it's going to help you to understand your own cycles, your own personality, and there's lots of things about life you'll understand a lot better, and that's very valuable.
Yeah, and with something like your Saturn returning, you know, you, as Charmaine said, your disciplinarian returning, being forewarned is being forearmed then. And also it helps you to make sense of what is happening.
Right, absolutely.
I have to tell you,
making sense of what's happening is very important. Yes.
Yeah. I have to tell you, for me to get into astrology now would be too difficult. I always had a problem with math, but I get the gist of what you're saying, because I sometimes read my cards, and you know, and it does the same kind of, it gives that same kind of sense of direction where you go, oh, okay, you know, it's not a scary thing. So, and it sometimes grounds you. Well, does me anyway.
Absolutely. It's a little bit like it's a type of X-ray, you could say, that you can help you see some of the hidden layers of what's going on in your life. And, you know, even though my conscious mind has been skeptical about, you know, tarot cards, I actually do find that very often they do work very well. And people who've had readings done that way often get the very similar information at the same time, you know, and I believe there are different ways one can access that kind of insight. And I think that astrology has its own special advantages as a tool for that. But it certainly isn't that dissimilar to the cards, for example, or other forms of divination. You know, Sungul must throw the bones, and essentially you're doing the same thing. It's a similarly, you know, type of X-ray they're looking at to see how the energies are configured for you at that particular time.
Right.
And, you know, we often can really benefit from that objectivity, because sometimes we can be very wrapped up in a problem and not see all the different elements in it in perspective.
Right.
Richard Fidlow, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your wisdom with us. From me, Liesl Tom, take
pleasure.
Care.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
And from me, Charmaine. Alrighty. And from me, Charmaine. Also, goodbye. Thanks, Palisa. CliffCentral.com.